This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome to another episode of Blog on the Pod. This time round, we'll be talking about what everyone else has been talking about for the last few months, and that's the topic of inflation. In this short episode, I'll be asking what pattern is inflation likely to follow, what's the likely impact on growth, and just how is the UK consumer going to cope with the cost of living? And who better to give us his views than our inflation guru and global economist, James Carrick, who joins me now. James, welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Great to have you on. Now, shall we start then with the blog you've written recently, James, about the Bank of England and its hawkish stance, alluding to the UK's probably all too familiar wage price spiral. I mean, given the cost of living, and I've noticed it already, and I'm sure you have too, is the UK consumer, are we able to weather the impending storm?
Thank you. That's a great question. We've obviously had a big rise in prices across the board. It's mainly energy, mainly gas and electricity, also used cars due to a shortage of microchips. But now it is broadening to a whole variety of items, particularly on the goods side. So there's a big squeeze on consumer spending power. I don't think I can answer and say the consumer is going to be fine because there are different types of consumer. Some people weathered the COVID storm quite well. Richer and older households who had a fixed income, whether it's a pension or a salary that stayed steady, and they didn't go out on a holiday, they didn't go out on spend on the services. They've got a buffer of savings built up into their bank account, and they can weather this storm. But unlike in the US, where the government gave lots of money to everybody, there are some people who didn't do so well during the COVID, those who were put on furlough, those who were on low incomes and were struggling to get by anyhow. And energy in particular is very regressive. It does hurt the poor more than the rich because we spend a similar amount of money on energy, no matter if we're rich or poor. We all have to warm ourselves up. So some households are going to be very squeezed. Some households will be able to run down their excess savings, and the average is somewhere in between. But I don't want to say it's okay because that ignores the differences between those different types of households.
And I guess picking up on that point, James, then, I mean, I think people would want to know what's the likely pattern then of inflation. Are we going to reach a peak and then is it going to fall, or are we going to reach a peak, fall, and then it rise again? How long do we have to suffer this pain for, basically?
Yeah, so we think that inflation in the UK is going to spike further around April when we have the big rise in energy bills. And we're likely to have another rise in energy bills in October, based on what the current gas futures prices are showing. But the government is going to give us some subsidy to offset that. But the real fall in inflation won't come until the following year, when this increase in prices drops out and maybe prices start to fall again in 2023. So for the UK, we have a kind of like an arch. It's going to rise further in the short term, and then it's going to fall just as rapidly, maybe even more so, in 2023. But I want to add that that's not really what matters in the sense that it's the level of prices that really matters. If the inflation rate is the rate of change, if you go up a lot and down a bit, the price level is still high. And then we also need to look through the volatility. The Bank of England, I think, will be focusing on things like services, like a hairdresser or a restaurant, things that associate with labor costs, rather than these volatile energy prices, which go up and down all the time.
Is that the same pattern then? I mean, I appreciate you're talking about, you know, the actual level at which it's going to settle. But is that the same pattern in the UK as the US, or is it different?
The US is different to Europe, as in the Euro area and the UK, because we all import gas from Russia and the price of imported gas has shot up. America is very self-sufficient. It has a lot of gas and it can't actually export that gas. It has a lot of gas stuck at home. So they are quite fortunate on a relative basis. They're not suffering from the pain of the rise in energy prices. So in the US, we expect that inflation will start to come off quicker than in the UK. It is surging through there. And that's on the view of the goods prices coming down. So as I mentioned, we have semiconductor shortages pushing up the price of cars. Well, actually, we've seen semiconductor shortages mean they can't produce cars, which means that the price of secondhand cars has gone through the roof because there isn't normally people buying a new car and then selling their old one. At some point, we continue to expect, you know, things will return to gravity. How long can prices remain 40% above their pre-COVID levels? So at some stage, those prices will reverse and that will push inflation down and you won't have the energy shock.
But does that mean then, and that's an interesting point about energy and the US being self-sufficient, does that mean then that actual growth rates will be very different? Are we expecting much slower growth rates in the UK-Europe area to the US, or will they all, as you say, mean revert?
Yes, we actually are more cautious relative to consensus on growth in the euro area and the UK because of the energy shock. In the US, we're more comfortable about the growth outlook, quite optimistic, because they don't have that same shock. And as I said, the distribution of money from the government was more broadly based in the United States than it was in Europe, where some households struggled. So we think that the US consumer has more firepower to deal with the inflation shock. In fact, taking a step back, why is inflation so high? A lot of the inflation in the world is probably due to US excess demand. If we look at global goods consumption is above the pre-COVID trend. You know, you and me, we've all done it. We haven't been able to go out to the services, so we bought some more goods. You've bought a shaver to cut your own hair. I've done that anyhow. So there's been a substitution from services to goods. And what's surprising is goods demand is still above the long run average. You know, we haven't seen any rotation back towards services, and you can't just magically get goods out of thin air. It takes time. So in many respects, it's the strong demand in the US which is pushing up inflation rather than high inflation is going to drag down US growth.
But hang on a minute, and I may have got this wrong, and that's why we invite experts like you onto the pod, James. But so if you're saying, you know, strong demand in the US, so the Federal Reserve has said, hang on a minute, you know, we can't have this happen kind of thing. Because if you think back to pre-Christmas, I think from memory, there are only about 2 rate hikes priced into markets, right? Now I'm reading 7, and I'm not sure that's the most recent research I'm reading. It could be that it goes further than 7. So obviously the US Federal Reserve has put its hand up and says, enough, whatever the cause, enough. And I suppose the next question is could US tightening in particular, because that is the number one economy, could it be higher than economists like yourself are expecting, given those huge US CPI numbers that are coming out?
It certainly could be, but as you discussed, the bond markets have gone so quickly from not pricing in many rate hikes to pricing in a lot. When we look at the interest rate futures for the UK, the euro area and the US, they do seem to be maybe overshooting, particularly in the UK and the euro area. For example, it thinks that the Bank of England will deliver 5 or 6 rate hikes this year. We think they're going to do 4. One in March, one in May, and then going back to a quarterly pace. Anything is possible, but right now, I think the market has been what we call whipsawed. You know, they've been shocked by the high inflation numbers, we all have, but also the change in rhetoric from the central bank. And maybe they can overshoot. You know, they were too low relative to what the central bank is going to deliver in December. They could be too high right now.
Okay, So whilst the US is tightening then, and whatever form that tightening takes, China, on the other hand, we all know is easing for its own specific reasons, right? But I guess my question is, are inflationary pressures, to what extent are they fueled then by China easing credit?
Yes, very recently, you have seen a rise in Chinese credit creation. I mean, the Chinese economy hasn't been great. It has slowed down and they've started to put their foot back on the accelerator. Clearly, there's been issues in the property market and overinvestment there. So in terms of the big drivers, we're saying that China's not going to be a big drag because they are going to stabilize the economy. But we don't think China is either going to generate a massive boom and kind of push things up either way. I think it is the US which is driving global goods inflation. But in the UK, I think it's different. Whereas in the US, we categorize inflation as excess demand. In the UK, we think it's limited supply, partly energy, as we discussed. But also, let's not forget the B word, Brexit, and the shortage of labor. Companies consistently say they're short of labor. COVID has been an issue, and we can discuss that. But they also mentioned the B word as a reason why there's a shortage of labour as well.
So you're saying it's structural issues as well as cyclical issues in the UK?
That's correct. Yeah. So when I compared the UK with the euro area, and the ECB has recently signalled it's unhappy and might want to tighten policy, we don't see the same wage inflation dynamics in the euro area that we're seeing in the US and in the UK. So far, pay settlements look quite subdued, whereas the Bank of England, with its own regional contacts, has noted a sharp rise in pay in the UK due to a shortage of workers.
Don't know what my pay round will be, by the way, for anyone listening. We'll find out soon. Right, now on to more important matters and geopolitics, which we can't get away from at the moment, and the Russia-Ukraine situation, which again, we're hearing different reports and all the rest of it. But what we do know is, as you rightly said at the very beginning of this podcast, about oil and gas prices rising exponentially. I suppose the question on everyone's lips, in the UK at least, is what percentage of household budgets are typically spent on the energy basket?
Well, we discussed that the difference between what poorer, smaller households spend in energy and bigger and richer households spend isn't that big a difference. And so from the share of income, it can range from about 2 to 3% of somebody's income to almost 10% of somebody's income. So it's a huge shock for many households. And to be fair, the government did give a response, and I think it'll formalise that in the budget, and it is going to target that response at the lower earner households. But the reason why is that energy is very regressive. It does form a much larger share of the budgets of poorer households and richer ones.
I have to say, James, I thought it was going to be higher than that. When you said 10%, I thought you were going to say a greater number than that. So that's quite interesting. So in terms of actually the Carrick household then, and just to end on a personal note, what particular article, if you like, that's particularly liked in the Carrick household that have you seen inflation? Where have you seen inflation really bite into your household budget in terms of your favourite things?
It's interesting because we notice the things we buy more frequently go up in price. So I noticed that there's a little Asda garage around the corner from me, and I pop there when I'm hungry. It's food. You can just see every time you go there, it seems to be 10p higher for that little pizza or biscuits or whatever you're getting than before. The big thing for the Carrick household, though, is we have an old car and we're doing a lot of traveling now. My son's at secondary school and we've refused to buy another secondhand car because the price is so crazy. But, you know, if the old car keeps breaking down, as it has done, at some stage you have to buy it. So we're kind of wrestling, you know, will they come down or do we have to bite the bullet?
Kids, cars and pets. That's just the most expensive. I have to say, I've noticed the price of my fish and chips has gone up 20%, which I'm not happy about, but better for the waistline, I guess. Anyway, lots more to talk about, but you have covered the main points. So, James, thank you so much for coming on the pod and sharing with us your expertise, and talk to you soon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, lgim.com. Copyright 2021, Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.